Oh, boy, Ainsley. It was so good of Jeff and Brian to give us a couple of hours off.
And how, Sierra? I was starting to worry about Santa. He didn't answer any of the letters I sent.
You doofus. I told you chewing gum wouldn't work as postage, but it's going to be okay. We're next.
Holy what the...
Me first.
No.
Come on, I'm going now.
Move.
Get out of the way.
There's room for both of us, Sierra.
Okay, me first.
Jesus, kid. How old are you anyway?
I want 128 gig iPad Air and a new iPhone 5S that's gold and Angry Bird Star Wars and a case from Vaca case for both of them and a new Mac Pro totally maxed out because that's cool and a Ferrari.
Jesus, kid. A Ferrari? Fine. Whatever. And what the hell do you want?
Me? I just want for Jeff and Brian to be happy.
I want that too!
And that, dear kids, is the heartwarming tale of how Jeff and Brian, in a moment of weakness, let the interns out to visit Santa.
Oh, man, that's a heartwarming holiday tale.
It was. That was really nice. I feel a little warm spot. It's like my heart grew 3 times its size that day.
Exactly. The only thing it was short was an appearance by Charlie in the Box. Because nobody likes a Charlie in the Box.
We like a Charlie in the Box.
How about a train with square wheels or a doll that won't cry?
Just because the doll doesn't cry, it doesn't mean it's defective. Maybe she's just a strong girl.
That's true. That is totally possible. I do, however, I've always been taken with the notion that someone would have bothered to make the train with square wheels.
Well, you know, look at some of the modern art that's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And I just realized what's actually wrong with a girl doll. It has nothing to do with being strong, because strong people cry.
That's true.
They were making fun of her because she was born without tear ducts. That's crappy.
That is pretty darn... Those were different times, man.
Yeah, those were different times. Square wheel trains and mocking the people that don't have tear ducts.
And Charlie in the Box.
Yeah, poor Charlie.
Yeah, poor Charlie. Hey, what are we doing here anyway? What is this?
Oh, it's us hanging out and talking, and oh no, wait, it's the podcast. We're doing Apple Context Machine episode number 236 on December 24th.
Right, I got all confused by the heartwarming holiday tale that opened the show rather than the bass riff and the thing that you say and the thing that I say and the pew-pews and the, you know.
Yeah, good times.
Good times.
Yeah, times are different.
And today is Christmas. Merry Christmas.
That's right. Merry Christmas, movie house.
And you know, it's funny. You remember you asked me to do Merry Christmas as Frosty. And I totally choked. In between then and now, I realized that I used to go around doing that all the time.
And now you apparently
remembered that, and I didn't. So that's kind of funny. Did you see any of the Christmas specials this year?
No, I didn't get the chance to see any of them. I'm going to make up for all of it by watching the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Oh, that's tomorrow, right?
Uh-huh. Oh, and yeah.
I've been meaning to tell you, I just saw... Now, you and I have talked about Doctor Who quite a bit, mostly off camera. But this is the Christmas show, so we're going to talk about it on camera today. And I had voiced... You've long known that I thought David Tennant was a wonderful Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But that some of the budget...
Cinematography.
Good Lord. Some of the budget cinematography especially in his first few seasons, was really off-putting. And I ended up watching several episodes in a row and got used to it and enjoyed them, enjoyed those episodes much more than I had in the past. And the one that I'm in the middle of that is just so far fantastic is called Midnight.
Oh, Midnight is intense.
It is, in fact, fantastic. That woman who speaks with him.
Oh, yes.
That performance by the both of them, but especially her. But especially when they get face to face, and they're talking together, and then when she shifts, how does she even make that transition to speaking right before him?
It's amazing, just amazing. I have goosebumps on my arms right now thinking about it. It's a wonderfully powerful episode.
Fantastic. I have a few minutes left on it, so I haven't seen the ending of it yet. But it's a good episode.
You know how you don't get how I can read a book and take like a year to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get how you can watch a Doctor Who episode in segments like you do.
Fair enough, but it's because I tend to have a TV going when I'm working. So I don't often just sit down and watch TV anyway. So my TV is effectively broken up anyway.
And I accept that this is a Brianism.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
I just simply can't grasp.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Nonetheless, what an awesome, awesome episode.
Yeah, really terrific.
If you get a chance to watch the Doctor Who Confidential for that episode,
mm-hmm.
you will love it. It's just fascinating because they do go into a lot of the back and forth between the Doctor and that woman and how they had to really work to get the
timing
to fit,
yeah.
right.
Yeah, no, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Does she specialize in this or anything? Did she get this role for her ability to do it? Because I thought she was fantastic.
They just thought she was the right actor for the job.
Her eyes are super intense.
They are. Yes.
Super intense in a really good way. And yeah, anyway, good episode. Good times. Merry Christmas.
That's awesome.
Finally. Yeah, nobody likes a Charlie in the Box.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
Well, now it is Christmas, and we are working on our Christmas day for you, our gentle reader, who will probably not be listening to us until later, because that's how we roll.
That is how we roll.
And although, you know what's fun to think? Someone right now is listening to us on their brand new iOS device, or maybe their new Mac.
We're breaking in their brand new Apple product.
That is, I mean, honestly, it's pretty exciting.
It is. For you, yes, you with that brand new iPod or iPad or Mac right now.
Or iPhone. Yep.
I feel so much closer to you. We're sharing a special moment right now.
Yeah, right now. So let's talk about some things. We're going to do a little bit of a different format. We're just going to do, let's see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. That's our normal format, Brian.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Oh, my lips are sealed.
Yeah, good, excellent. As long as no one knows. So Apple released the new Mac Pro finally. Well, I say released.
it's so cute how you say that. Yeah.
Apple shipped, and there's some air quotes around that.
What Apple did was change the website so we can order them.
Yes.
That's what really happened.
But it does look like some people have been getting your orders being readied statements for delivery on the 30th.
Yes. So the way this all played out was Apple said, hey, here's the day and you'll be able to order your Mac Pro. And when the order page was there, it said shipping as early as December 30th.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't even like you could get one overnight and have it the day after they were first available. You can't even see these in most Apple stores.
Right.
Because the inventory is so limited.
But you know why it was important for them to release it, to make it available when they did?
Well, it's because they were running out of time, and they promised it was coming this year.
Not even that. It's so that people dealing with people could choose to include it as a purchase on this year's taxes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know, this is a professional machine. The vast majority of people buying it are professionals. And either their company is buying it and they've got budgets to deal with and budgets that have been allocated, or their you know, small businesses, independent businesses, consultantships, etc. And you know, they need to be able to choose when they buy it for their tax reasons.
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. So they met that deadline. Now, it doesn't mean that you'll actually get your Mac Pro this year. Within just a few hours of the order page going live, Apple had already changed the shipping time to February.
Right. And of course, the intense speculation is that because Apple can't make it? Well, Apple clearly can't make enough. But can they not make hardly any? Or is demand simply that great? And my personal guess is it's towards the demand side. I believe that there was a lot of pent-up demand for these devices.
I think there's a lot of pent-up demand for these devices. I think it's smart that that Apple has been very clear from the beginning of order time, mm-hmm, that you're not going to get this right away.
Right. Right. And they're being made in Austin. We've long speculated that it would be the new Mac Pro that was going to be made in the U.S. because Tim Cook said that manufacturing was coming back to the U.S. for at least one Mac line. And you and I and the rest of the Apple watching world have speculated that it would be the Mac Pro because it is, in fact, their lowest volume device and their highest margin device.
Right.
And it turns out that was true. Tim Cook mentioned it in a tweet. You know, I'm just going to mention here, I've said this several times. We've talked about this a couple of times. Tim Cook is the most deliberate speaker. He is an incredible communicator. And he is so good at it that most people don't even realize it, especially Apple haters and doubters and people that aren't really steeped in the app world. He is an amazing communicator.
He is. And I think a lot of people think that he's slow or doesn't know what to say.
Or that he's uncharismatic. And I completely disagree with that.
I think he's very deliberate.
He's extremely deliberate. And he is powerful in that deliberateness. Because he is deliberate, he is very powerful when he is speaking. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
I agree. I find that when I'm with other people and they're watching Tim Cook speak, like, mm-hmm, on a video, mm-hmm, that they are very intent on paying attention to what Tim is saying.
Without realizing it. Yeah. Yeah, he's got that quiet. He's got that quiet thing where you lean in to hear what he's saying.
Yes, and he's taking control of that conversation without people realizing it.
Yes, and when you contrast him to Steve Jobs, yeah, he looks drab, but that's a mistake. It's a mistake to stop there. You need to instead understand and look at everything he's actually doing, and not just compare it to Steve and stop with your thoughts right there. He is, everything he does is just so specific and so deliberate. The way he drops hints, I mean, I believe that the way Tim Cook communicates is going to end up being studied by future business classes.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. And part of what they will be studying is his body language.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's a very powerful speaker.
Yes. Indeed. So we've got the new Mac Pro. The new Mac Pro is in Austin, is being built in Austin. You know, we've seen the manufacturing videos of that thing. I wonder where the supply constraint is. It seems like Apple's actually making a lot of, but you know, certainly it's not the case. They, you know, they're making their own cases.
Pretty much every component in that computer is custom designed.
It's custom designed. You've got Intel's processors, you've got AMD's video cards, and you've got whoever's making the SSDs. It must be one of those components that is causing the supply constraints. That's the only thing I can figure.
Well, don't forget that all of these key pieces that Apple is buying from other companies have to go on these very custom motherboards that they've designed. They're
right.
The triangle tube shape things. And if they're having issues getting enough inventory for those parts, it doesn't matter how many processors you get. If there's nothing to stick them on, you can't.
That's true. I wonder who's doing the population of those boards. I wonder if Apple has internal machinery that they're running in Austin that's doing their own board population, or if they're actually outsourcing that to somewhere in Asia, possibly even the Samsung plant that's in Austin.
They're building all the motherboards, shipping them over here, and then popping them in the cases in Austin.
Yeah.
I suppose that's possible.
It's extremely possible. I don't know if, you know, with the volumes that they're doing on this Mac Pro, I mean, you know, we talk about pent up demand, but still they're not going to sell anywhere near as many Mac Pros as they're selling, iMacs by a long shot, let alone MacBook Airs or MacBook Pros.
Right. And that doesn't mean that the Mac Pro is a failure product. It's just for a much smaller market.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not even a comparison. But anyway, it's exciting. I haven't ordered mine yet. I'm hoping to be able to do it next year, or early next year, like when they are actually available.
That would be very cool. I would love to see one of those sitting on your desk.
I would, too. I'd have to move some things.
Yeah, for you, that's actually true, because your current Mac Pro sits under your desk, so you'd have to make space on top of your desk for your computer.
Yes, and I don't keep a sparse desk.
To be fair, I think you only need to move like two soda pop cans, and you'll be fine.
That's fair enough. I have no soda pop cans on my desk at this moment. I took them away before we recorded.
Well, it is the Christmas episode. We're a little more formal, so that totally makes sense.
Merry Christmas! Speaking of Merry Christmas, how about that Samsung commercial?
Oh, geez. Okay, so Samsung has set the new bar for creepy commercials.
Creepy, douchey, scumbag commercials.
Stalker. And I think demeaning towards women.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't get it. It's an awful commercial. So this commercial starts off with three people. We've got the hapless non-Galaxy Gear owning dude. We've got the cute girl sitting between the hapless guy and our hero. And I use hero with air quotes. And hero has got a Galaxy Gear. I can't believe they're spending money advertising this thing, first of all.
Now, I need to stop and point out one of the first things that was an issue for me with this commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all sitting on this chairlift at a ski resort, riding mm-hmm. up to the top of the mountain so they can ski down.
Mm-hmm.
The hero is a snowboarder, and the girl is a snowboarder, and the hapless comic relief guy is a skier.
Oh, that's actually pretty smart, though. That actually is probably the one good thing in that commercial.
Except that he's not wearing his skis. He's holding his skis.
Well, yeah, because he's supposed to be a doofus.
No, you don't do that. You can't get on the chairlift if you're holding your skis.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he loses his skis partway up, which of course is why he's not wearing them, so he can lose them.
Right.
But the
hero has a European accent of some sort. They could be somewhere in Europe. Chairlift rule. Okay. He's got the galaxy gear and he's holding it up like a complete douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking at it. And then he looks over at the girl like, aren't you impressed? I mean, is this 1972?
And she is.
And she is impressed.
She's all dreamy-eyed, impressed with this guy's horrible-looking orange tumor.
Smarmy looks on his face, too. And I don't understand who wrote this. I don't understand who shot this. I don't understand who okayed it after it was finished. I don't get any of it. And then he's like, he's using a real douchebaggy technique to get her phone number.
Yeah, give me your phone number. And he holds his watch tumor up. And she does.
And she does, yeah. She thinks about it, but she does.
She doesn't think about it very long.
Not hard enough. And then he's busily following her down the slopes, and he's
surreptitiously taking photographs and videos of her.
I mean, that same message could have been delivered so much better if they knew each other, right? It wouldn't have been creepy. You can make a good case of taking photograph, although, you know, take a steady photograph with your arm while you're on a snowboard. Please, that's not going to happen.
No, that's so not going to happen.
So ridiculous, but whatever. You could have presented that concept a lot better without him being the creepy stalker.
Yes, you could. And he gets creepier because he finds her in the bar. And now he starts bragging about his stalker tactics and shows her all of the photos and videos that he has taken of her without her knowledge.
Here's the pictures that I took of you.
She thinks that's pretty groovy.
Oh, that's so groovy. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's the whole thing. And then at the end, the very end, he breaks the fourth wall or the third wall?
The fourth wall.
The fourth wall. He breaks the fourth wall. He looks at the camera with a smarmy douchebag look. It's an awful commercial. It's every bit as bad a commercial as the Galaxy S4 media event was a bad media event. Every bit.
Oh, you're right. Yes.
I'm guessing the same people were making some decisions there.
Probably. Okay, now here's another issue that I had with the sexism in that commercial.
Uh-huh.
At the end, through his creepiness, stalking, and douchey, smarmy attitude, he has won over this girl.
Yes.
And it is clear that she is now his, and I'm saying that in a property sense, because that's exactly how it comes across. And when he breaks the fourth wall and looks at the camera, when he looks at us, the look on his face lets us know that he's totally going to get lucky with her tonight. That's his assumption.
Yes.
So the message is, put on this watch.
Hold it up at awkward angles.
Stalk a girl.
Make
and
sure
she
you
will sleep with you.
Yeah, and make sure you look at her and look back and forth between your watch and her so that she knows to be impressed. And you will get lucky.
You know, I may not be the world's top expert on romantic relationships, but I can safely say I don't think this is a good recipe for a happy ending.
Brum. I'm just going to let that stand on its own.
There you go.
Yeah, so then we have the Nokia ad. Now we actually have we have slightly different takes on the Nokia ad.
Yeah, I find it far creepier than you do.
So this is a total. I'm not going to call it ripoff. It's inspired. Let's use the more. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
That's okay. It's inspired I was even helping you. I can't wait to hear where you went.
Thank you. You're so kind. inspired by Sweeney Todd.
And I didn't really feel like it was inspired by Sweeney Todd.
What?
Really? And.
But he's a barber and he's all creepy and.
Yeah, there's all kinds of creepy barbers out there. I've seen Sweeney Todd.
Where are you
times.
Getting your haircut?
Well, if I was getting my haircut by Sweeney Todd, I would have been cooked into pies by now.
That's probably true. That's probably true. But so I thought it was a Sweeney Todd thing. Maybe it wasn't, but it's a creepy, creepy barber who's going to cut this guy's hair. And I thought that part was funny. I mean, you know, you mentioned to me when we were talking about it ahead of time, you talked about his fingernails. I think his fingernails were just fantastic because they were just awful.
The fingernails were fantastic from an artistic standpoint. They were creepy, and they added the I feel dirty creepiness to the whole thing for me.
Yeah, fair enough. The one part I didn't like about that commercial was the fact that he grows a mullet. I'm not sure how that's supposed to be a good thing, but I think we share a bias against mullets.
That I believe we do. The whole mullet thing, I mean, as he's tapping on the screen of this Windows tablet,
mm-hmm.
you can hear scissors cutting. There's no one in the room now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's chunks of hair falling to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And as this is happening, his mullet is growing out.
Yeah, which it's not that it's bad. It just didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't make any sense. The images that are on the tablet are of the creepy barber and his assistant, who's dressed sort of like a macabre nurse. And so these are the images that you're seeing as he's getting his
That doesn't say
uncut.
Mullet to me. Mullet to me is like, you know, they should have been listening to some Lynyrd Skynyrd
and some Schlitz malt liquor.
Yeah, watching some Smokey and the Bandit or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. So that part just didn't make sense. So let's compare the Nokia ad to the Samsung ad.
All right, the Nokia ad,
hands down better.
It's hands down better, and it isn't demeaning or sexist.
It's true.
It's just not. Creepy.
So the creepy parts I liked. It's the parts that didn't make any sense that sort of leave me scratching my head. Like why does he grow a mullet, and why does that make me want to buy a tablet?
Right.
Makes me not want to buy that tablet.
Why did they leave shots of the screen in where you see the actor rotating the tablet or doing other things where it's very clear that you're dealing with serious latency issues on this device? It's clearly very sluggish.
That's a good point, too. All right. Well, let's... You know, bagging on Samsung is like tipping wheelchairs.
It's like bagging on Samsung.
Yeah, it's like bagging on Samsung.
It's a target-rich environment.
So let's actually talk about a cool thing. Let's talk about Bill Gates and the cow.
You know, that actually is a really cool thing. This is awesome. This is something that you came across and wrote up, and it put a smile on my face.
So Reddit does this thing called Reddit GIFs, where it's basically a giant anonymous secret Santa thing where you stick your name, you register to be part of it, everybody else registers to be part of it, and then you get assigned, everybody's name gets assigned to someone else, and you're supposed to buy that person a gift. There's wish list that you can put when you register, and you have no idea what's going to happen.
Right, and then eventually something shows up in your mail.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. Assuming everybody participates, and it seems like everybody who registers does in fact participate, or most everybody. And like this ends up being like tens of thousands of people do this, and it's a pretty cool thing that they're doing. And one woman wrote about how Bill Gates, the Bill Gates, was her secret Santa. Bill Gates signed up for this thing.
Right, and what he ended up doing was donating a cow in her name to a I forgot the name of the charity.
Heifer International.
Heifer International. So someone in part of the world where they're poverty stricken,
emerging world.
Yeah, and so and where a cow would be an incredible asset to have. This organization gets cows to those people.
Yeah, they sometimes get cows. They will sometimes provide seeds. They will sometimes simply provide money for a young girl to go to school. And it's, you know, basically it's sort of the teach a man to fish versus giving him a fish routine, even though, of course, you're actually giving them the cow. But one aspect of giving a cow to a family in the developing world is that that cow becomes income.
Right.
For that family, you know, not they're not butchering it and eating it. It's a milk cow. So the milk becomes a source of revenue. And part of the agreement in accepting the cow is that the first female offspring of the cow goes to another family. So it's a self-propagating. It's a self-propagating program. It's a very old charity. I think it was started by a chap after the Spanish American War. I think it goes back a long ways. They've been around for a while.
A chap, you just referred to a man as a chap.
I did.
Wow.
That's how I roll sometimes.
Clearly.
And it's a really cool charity that Bill chose for this woman. And then he also gave her a travel book because she talked about her love of travel and her profile. And he sent her a picture, a photograph of him. And he gave her a stuffed cow.
Right.
That she got to keep for herself. And he had a photograph of himself taken holding her cow and her certificate. Of right. The donation certificate that he made in her name.
So she'd know it was all legit.
Yeah. So you should know it was actually Bill Gates. And that's actually that's a cool present. It's a cool thing that Bill Gates took the time to do all that. And he gave her something else, too, that she said that she wanted to keep private. So there was another thing that was in there for her. But Bill gets cooler and cooler the older he gets, in my opinion.
See, stuff like this reinforces my belief that 100 years from now, Bill Gates will be remembered for his philanthropic work and not for Microsoft, which I think is great.
I'll throw you one better.
Okay.
Microsoft will be remembered because of Bill Gates' philanthropic work.
Huh.
How do you like that one?
I like that a lot, and I think that's very possible.
I just came up with that one off the top of my head. Oh, hold on. Oh, sorry. I dislocated my shoulder patting myself on the back.
You're a fine chap.
That was a cool story. We've got a link up. You can read more about it. You can read the woman's her full tale is really interesting. She steps you through it pretty nicely. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And now we have another tech icon. We have Tim Cook.
Did he buy someone a cow?
He did not buy anyone. Well, he may have. We don't know. He is very involved with several charities, a lot more so than his predecessor ever was.
At least as far as we know.
As far as we know, that's true. Steve Jobs was private I don't think he was a big believer in charity, per se.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But anyhow, so Tim Cook may or may not have given someone a cow, but that's not the point.
He did write a letter to Apple employees.
Yes, and he said interesting things like there are big plans in store for 2014.
Yeah, so most of it was just a thanks. You know, you guys rock. Our customers get to have really cool devices, and that's only possible because you and, you know, the sort of heartwarming stuff that a CEO might say to his or her employees. The final paragraphs, though, said that they had big plans, as you just said, for 2014, and he said something about it being something that customers were going to love. And again, he is such a careful speaker. This was a very deliberate leak a tease, maybe would be a better word, for the fact that Apple is going to do something outside of the things that they have already done in 2014.
That's right. And with that little nugget out there now, I can only imagine the frenzy that companies like Samsung are in, trying to figure out what it is that they need to do so they can beat Apple to market with whatever it is.
And fail.
And fail. Yeah. Well, Galaxy Gear. That's the first of it.
Yeah. I can't believe they're spending money advertising that thing. It's such a bad device. It is such, it's such a failure as a device. And to me, selling every one of those that they sell is a black mark against them. I don't understand why they're trying.
Maybe the ads aren't about trying to sell the product, but instead are to create a mindset in the public where Apple appears to be a follower and not a leader.
Oh, yeah. You're entirely right. That is a fantastic observation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, how many ads for the Apple iWatch are we seeing?
It's true. Not one.
Yeah.
Not one, because Apple's not going to release it until it's actually ready.
Yeah, assuming that's what they're really working on. And I've come to the point where I think they really are working on a watch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Something you wear on your wrist.
Yes, it'll be on the wrist.
Yep. So, Tim Cook teased us with that. Again, you know, this is part of his Cook Code. We've talked about Cook Code. It's my name for it.
Yeah. Trademark Brad Chaffin, 2013.
Yep. And
all rights reserved. Some oily discharge may occur.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you very much. Jeff Gamut will be my spokesperson today. But the Cook Code is, again, by saying this to Apple's employees, of course, he knew that the letter would be leaked to the public. And it is a very specifically crafted message to say that we're doing something that we haven't done before. And that's, to me, that's important because, he is so careful about what he says.
He is. And he's also really smart, because what he's done with this internal memo to Apple staff that he knew would not stay internal, he has managed to get all this extra publicity for Apple and has managed to drive up interest in what's Apple doing next.
Yep.
And he didn't have to hold a press conference. All he had to do was send out a memo to the staff.
Yep. Absolutely. And he did it with great effect. So this is going to be an exciting year. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I'm expecting that we'll have some really big oh wow moments as Apple gives us some really cool reveals.
What is the class of 2014? What do they rhyme with? Like, you know, class of 84, party to the floor. It was a fantastic. I had a bunch of brainiacs in charge of my class, apparently. But, you know, class of 14, it seems like hardly yesterday when we were weaned. I mean, like, you know, what do they say? And
class of 14, love to eat my poutine.
What?
Apparently that's like a spread or something. I don't know.
And, you know, and 15, would 15 just do the same thing? Yeah, we're the same.
Class of 15, glad I'm not a tween.
I like that.
I don't know.
I like that. That's good. That's good. China Mobile. China Mobile, finally here.
Yeah, China Mobile. They finally have the iPhone. Now, what I find fascinating about the whole announcement, because that happened a few days ago. It was on a Sunday. Apple does a press release. And this is after all of this information about the iPhone coming to China Mobile has already been out, and it's been on the China Mobile website.
Yep.
And then finally the official announcement comes from Apple. And at that point, Apple stock shoots up.
Yeah.
Even though it was already on the China Mobile website.
Well, I mean, China
Mobile website, that's a tacit confirmation.
It is a tacit confirmation, but I think it's reasonable for Wall Street to actually want the deal to be officially announced by both companies. Because you never know if someone in China Mobile is putting something up when they shouldn't be. Like, before it's actually cemented.
Yeah, okay, yeah, there is that.
You know, they don't have the same kind of strict controls about what a public company can say. And for that matter, China Mobile is owned by the state.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah. So, I'm not gonna ding on anybody too hard for in the stock market for waiting for Apple to actually make it official.
Yeah, it's just fascinating how the whole dynamics works. So you can't buy it yet, but you can pre-order as of Christmas Day, and then it will
in China,
and then the 5C and the 5S will be available in stores in China on January 17th.
Right. And it's when it ships too, right?
Yes.
January. So like the ones that you pre-order. So, you know, this is a big deal. China Mobile does have over 700 million customers.
Over 760 million customers. It's
more than twice as many people as the U.S. has people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the vast majority of them are not even 3G customers. So, you know, it's not like Apple could sell 100 million iPhones to China Mobile customers next year. I mean, the vast majority of China Mobile's customer base can't afford the iPhone. But it does open up tens of millions of new customers, tens of millions of realistic customers,
right,
for Apple to have access to.
And China Mobile just did this big network upgrade, so you have proper compatibility with the iPhone.
And yeah, but that hasn't been rolled out everywhere, has it?
It's rolled out, as far as I know, over most of their market. I may be wrong.
I thought there was still some issues with that, but I'm not positive.
So, well, anyhow, it's happening. And this means that Apple now has the iPhone available on all three of the big China cell phone carriers.
Right. Right. And, China Mobile is, in fact, the largest carrier on the planet. So this is a big deal for Apple. And the stock, I think yesterday, the stock went, the deal was technically announced on Sunday.
Right. And when I wrote about it on Monday, well, when I wrote about the stock value on Monday.
Oh, right.
Because I wrote about the announcement on Sunday.
Right.
When I wrote about the stock on Monday, it was already up like $18.60.
Right. And it ended up closing up, I think, closer to $21.
Right. And since then, Apple stock has been kind of sitting around $567.
Right. So the markets reacted positively, as they should. This will add profits to Apple's bottom line. This was the biggest hole. You know, China Mobile and Docomo were the two biggest holes in Apple's iPhone portfolio, and they have been closed. Both of those.
They have been filled with iPhone 5Ss and 5Cs.
Filled. Yes, filled is better than closed, and that's good. That's good. It's good for Apple. It's good for the iPhone. Market. It's funny. I saw one, I think it was CNN, that was talking about how China Mobile doesn't mean that Apple's still not going to be able to gain any market share in China because their stuff's too expensive and that they should make cheap stuff.
They're going to sell them in China.
What's that?
They will be able to sell them in China. That will not
be a problem. Yeah, but they won't. Apple is not going to have 30% market share in China. Apple doesn't need 30% market share in China. The only market share in China that matters for a company like Apple is at the very, very top, because there's a lot of poor folks in China. And there's just this constant thread of people who think that market share is the only thing that matters. It's still continuing today. It's, you know, China Mobile brought out this whole new raft of such articles, and it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not the market share that matters. It's the success of the company selling their products. And in some cases, that does equate to market share, but it doesn't have to. Apple is bringing in more money than any other smartphone maker.
Yeah, by a lot.
Right. And they are not the world's largest smartphone seller.
Just the world's largest profit maker.
Right. So, yeah, market share isn't critical. And they will sell a lot of iPhones in China. And they don't need a 30% penetration.
No. And now they're going to sell more. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a huzzah! Good thing. Yay!
Yay!
Yay! Well, you know, I think we have a little bit of time to mention that the rumor. You covered a rumor for us.
Oh, right. The rumor about the big iPad.
Someone's putting a date on it, right?
Yeah. So there's sources coming out of China, I believe, that are saying that a 12.9-inch iPad is coming in October 2014. And they're also thinking that when this new iPad model ships, it will replace the 11-inch MacBook Air. It will also be targeted at the education market. So I have some problems with this. Not that there's a bigger iPad coming, because even though I don't think that Apple needs to do that, I think it's still going to happen. Remember, I'm the guy that said Apple doesn't need to make an iPad mini. And now I own one.
And I think you've also come out against the notion of Apple doing a phablet, too.
You said that just to piss me off. I know it.
I did. Nobody likes a Charlie in the Box.
No. No, they don't, Brian. Anyhow, so I think the bigger tablet is going to happen. But
it's not for education. That's ridiculous.
Right. It's not just for education. And I don't
It's not even aimed at education. That's ridiculous.
I agree. This is going to be marketed more towards the professional end.
Yeah, it's going to be called the iPad Pro for one thing.
Right. Yeah, it's not going to be called the iPad Ed or the iPad Class or the iPad School.
No. No, and it's going to be more expensive than the other iPads. Why? Who thinks it's for the educator? It's so ridiculous.
Right.
Who said that?
Boy, you write so many things, I can't keep all of it straight. I believe that it was sources that ended up talking. It may have been through DigiTimes again.
So here is the thing. I just thought of a new way to sort of encapsulate interpreting Apple rumors that come out of Apple supply chain. One rumor, two rumors don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
A dozen rumors, and now you're starting to get a really good idea of what Apple is going to actually do. But none of the rumors, I don't care if there's 20 of them, mean much of anything when it comes to the release date.
Right. And in this case, saying that this will target the education market?
Yeah, they don't know.
No, they don't know. And they also said that Apple dropped the 11-inch MacBook Air, and it will be replaced with this 12.9-inch tablet.
Yeah, Apple, the supply chain doesn't know strategic decisions like that either.
And
it's a very small group of people in Cupertino that have, like 5, maybe 8 people in Cupertino who know all of the strategic things that Apple is planning.
I have a problem, yes. And I have a problem with the whole dropping the 11-inch MacBook Air, because you're talking about products that don't serve the same market. People that need an iPad, and that's the specific device they need, that means that the MacBook Air is not the right product for them. But for people that are buying the MacBook Air, they need to have features that aren't available on the iPad.
But let me just play devil's advocate, because I agree with what you're saying, but let me play devil's advocate. What if Apple has been seeing sales of the MacBook Air, the 11-inch MacBook Air, decline in favor of both the 13-inch MacBook Air and the iPad Air and iPad 4 and iPad 3 before it? So what if Apple has been seeing a long-term decrease in the entry-level form factor?
That's possible. And if that's the case, then do you really need to replace the Air with a bigger iPad? Why not just stop selling the 11-inch iPad Air?
MacBook Air.
See, now here's another problem. There's too many Apple products that have names that are similar again. At least for me. And my feeble little mind.
I'm not going to say fair enough. So, yeah, but the real lesson here, though, is that the supply chain never knows what Apple's strategy is. The supply chain only knows what Apple is ordering. And to a much lesser extent, as we get a lot closer to release date, what Apple will be assembling those orders into. And that's a different segment of the supply chain. So the supply chain just never knows release dates, and the supply chain never knows strategic decisions, and the supply chain seldom knows exactly what a particular component is being ordered for. So to me, I like to think of it as like, you know, sitting in the middle of this stream of leaks and rumors, with your hands floating out to the side, and you're just sort of giving a feel, you know, getting a feel for all of them. And when the preponderance of evidence is there, you can accept the fact that Apple is going to be releasing a particular product that the supply chain is talking about. That's kind of how I see it.
There you go. And I just have to share the image you created in my head. And it's you. You're sitting in a swimsuit in the middle of a stream that's only a few inches deep. And you're kind of cross-legged, the water's going around you, and you're splashing with your hands off to the side, and you're giggling, and you're going, it's rumors, it's full of rumors.
Huh. And you're a strange bird sometimes, Jeff.
I know, I need therapy, don't I?
Because, like, you know, to me, it was like quiet, and I've got my arms just floating. Anyway, supply chain, rumors.
It's like a stream.
So, in that time is timey-wimey.
And wibbly-wobbly.
And wibbly-wobbly for us. We should probably cut this off so I can finish the skit that we already heard.
I think that sounds like a great idea. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm JGam at both places. And head on over to the iTunes store and rate our show, because we love it when you do that.
Indeed. And you can follow me on Twitter, TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. You can catch my personal blog at geektales.com. Jeff's over at freshbrewtales.com. And our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. That's all for this week. And we want everybody, whatever your creed, religion, or whatever is, to have a great holiday. For those celebrating Christmas, Merry Christmas.
That's right. And remember, stay subscribed, because if you don't, you're going to make the Charlie in the Box cry.
Yes, we don't want to see that. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Nobody wants a crying Charlie in the Box.